Hey everybody, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show. We have a tremendous episode here. We bring in Malia Shirley. She's on the board of directors of the Nebraska Freedom Coalition to give you an up-to-the-minute update from Nebraska, winner take all. There's so much at stake here. We give you the update that you need to hear. We also bring in Tyler Boyer from Turning Point Action to make a pitch to come join us in Arizona to get involved. We'll buy you a hotel, folks, for even a month. For a whole month, you can move to Arizona and help save the Republic. And then we bring in John Daniel Davidson from The Federalist, and he explains why the way America does immigration nowadays is a scam and it's hurting everybody. Please consider joining members, the members community, the exclusive Charlie Kirk community at members.charliekirk.com. That's members.charliekirk.com. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com.
I want to welcome our Nebraska representative, Malia Shirley. She's on the board of directors for the Nebraska Freedom Coalition. Malia, welcome back to the Charlie Kirk Show.
Hi, Andrew. Thanks for having me. Glad to be back with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got Nebraska updates. And by the way, if you just Google Nebraska winner take all, it's everywhere. And that's a really interesting indication that the regime media, the mainstream press, they know this is a serious risk come November 5th. So Malia, walk us through the updates. There was a huge meeting on Wednesday. We've covered it some, but from the insider's perspective, tell us what happened.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, obviously all of this started back in this spring when Charlie and Blake really just did a deep dive here on the show and said it very well could come down to Nebraska's second congressional district. So Charlie came out, we had a big rally, and the position then was similar to the governor's position now, to where he said, you know, we're not going to call a special session until we have the 33 votes. And it was really at a standstill for a few months. And then Charlie just came back out this past weekend, and there has been a lot of movement since then. There have been shifts in some of the kind of strong holdouts of senators who were adamant no's, who have gone from an adamant no to a maybe, which in and of itself, like I know you mentioned yesterday on the show, Mike McDonnell, who was a Democrat, is now a Republican senator. Him even saying that he's willing to come to an agreement, wants to find a way to get to that yes vote, is huge. A couple of the other senators who maybe weren't so keen on the idea seem to have really come around. Senator Lindsey Graham coming out to the state, meeting with a lot of our state legislators, I have heard from inside the Capitol, has moved the needle significantly. And I think a lot of the state legislators are getting to a point where they realize the urgency and almost the gravity of what this vote could mean, not just for Nebraska, but the implications it could have on the entire national election.
Yeah, I want to drill down on McDonnell specifically. So for people who don't know or are not aware, he's people speculate he wants to become mayor of Omaha. I don't know if he's publicly stated that or if that's speculation. He's a lifelong Democrat who switched to the Republican Party earlier in the year. This then becomes an issue, right? So he's now, people describe it that he's maybe kind of between a rock and a hard place a little bit, in the sense that he wants to be the mayor, but he also understands that being, you know, a no vote on this winner take all could put him at odds with his new Republican friends. But what we're seeing and what I'm hearing and kind of reading the tea leaves here is that He's telling people behind the scenes that I was misunderstood when I said I was always going to be a no on this vote. He's now sort of moved to a more open-minded posture. He's thoughtfully approaching it. Pillen has praised his thoughtfulness. From everything I've heard, the Republicans that are talking to him behind the scenes call him like a really, really thoughtful guy, that he's working in good faith, and he's looking for ways to become a yes. Is that an accurate presentation of the facts?
I would say yes. The reason that Senator McDonald left the Democrat Party was because of how radical they had become. He is, you know, very, very akin to your RFK Jr., your Tulsi Gabbard types, who they care about the rule of law, they care about our country and the values that we were founded on. You know, we might have a little bit different ideas of how to attain those goals, but he's definitely not your radical progressive type at all. And he actually is pro-life. That's one of his, one of the reasons that he switched parties to begin with, was because the Democrats were so adamantly anti-life. And so he is, well, he's very thoughtful. He's very principled. And I think that is an accurate representation.
I think those are great insights into the man himself. I think it's important to kind of understand this. Do the math for us, though, why his vote in particular is so important, Malia.
So where we're at right now, and kind of has has always been the case thus far, we can get to the 31 vote threshold. There have really been kind of two holdouts this whole time, Senator McDonald being one of them. And so for Senator McDonald to even be willing to come to the table and try to reach a yes vote, saying he's open-minded, he's willing to work with the party to get there, him saying that really sets a precedent for the other holdouts, whether it's just that singular other adamant no, or whether it's some of the others who are kind of just banding with the no votes thus far, which is kind of what we've seen. If Senator McDonald changes his tune on this issue and is willing to get to that yes, that really kind of encourages the other senators to follow in line with that.
So we need one more on top of McDonald. Is that the math? We need 33, correct?
We need 33 votes. Last weekend, as we were talking about it before Charlie came and, you know, was having a lot of those meetings, the count definitively that we were at was 28. There were three votes that were kind of only no votes because there were other no votes. So if those two votes, Senator McDonald being one of them, if those two votes switch to yes, assuming that's how it goes, then the other three would likely band with the senators as well.
This is a very plausible election map, right? So this is assuming that Kamala and the Dems sweep the Rust Belt, the blue wall, so to speak. That's Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and hold Virginia, which is an open question as well, but let's just assume it. And that Trump, Vance sweep the Sun Belt, which structurally is very likely. Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, and North Carolina. So if that scenario plays out, the way it's currently constructed, Kamala Harris would become the next president of the United States. However, if Nebraska, and that's assuming that Nebraska too goes Democrat, which Biden won in 2020, if Nebraska goes winner take all, that would push it to a 269-269, and then it would leave it to the House of Representatives to adjudicate. And since Republicans control more state delegations, that would likely result in a Trump presidency. So the stakes could not be higher. And one last pitch here, Malia, for McDonald. If he is pro-life, then ensuring that President Trump is in the White House by way of any two going to winner take all, it absolutely advances some of that. And I would also say he's a labor leader in Omaha. That's his background. President Trump is now, we're seeing from the polling, from the Teamsters, UAW, that he is dominating within organized labor. Malia, wrap it up for us.
I think that the senators have really come to understand how influential this could be on the national election. I don't think that anyone had really laid it out for them prior that it very well could come down to Nebraska's second congressional district. I think, you know, having RFK Jr., Tulsi Gabbard, a lot of these traditional Democrats coming on board and really selling the idea that Trump is the unity ticket plays well.
Malia, thank you for the update. We're going to keep watching it. Talk to you soon.
Are you ready to lose weight but not sure where to start? I understand. I was right where you are 2 years ago. Let me tell you why I chose the PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition Program. First, Dr. Ashley Lucas has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. Her program is based on years of research and is science-based. Second, the PhD program starts in nutrition. There is so much more. They know that 90% of permanent change comes from the mind, and they work on eliminating the reason you gain this weight in the first place. There's no shortcuts, pills, or injections, just solid, science-based nutrition and behavior change. And finally, a probably most importantly, I lost 30 pounds. Look, they're amazing. If you want to lose weight, you got to go to myphdweightloss.com. I was just texting with Dr. Ashley Lucas today. If you're ready to lose weight for the last time, call 864-644-1900. Go online at myphdweightloss.com. Do what I did and what hundreds of my listeners have done and call today, 864-644-1900. I recommend their program. Dr. Ashley Lucas has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. Her program is based on years of research and is science-based. Second, the PhD program starts in nutrition, but it's so much more. Go to myphdweightloss.com, myphdweightloss.com. Call 864-644-1900. I lost over 30 pounds. Dr. Ashley Lucas, great American. Check it out, myphdweightloss.com.
Right now, I'm joined by Tyler Boyer, COO of Turning Point Action. Tyler, I brought you on today. I wanted you to come on and give us an update on Commit 100. I recently told a reporter, I said, Commit 100 may be the most successful initiative in Turning Point Action history. Just lay it out what it is for the people that don't know, because it's a big, big project. Tyler Boyer.
Yeah, Andrew, thank you. I'm right now in Michigan. We're bopping back and forth between Michigan and Wisconsin and Arizona and Nevada, just focused on our full-time ballot chasing operation that we have. And everybody knows we've talked about Turning Point Action's ballot chasing operation. Our full-timers are out working diligently to get votes turned in. But the question is, you know, most often is, what else can I do if there's others that can't be full-time? We've launched our Commit 100 program. So that's tpaction.com/100. That's tpaction.com/100 to come to Arizona specifically, travel there, and we will assign you a hotel, give you a hotel so you can stay for free and go out and help us chase ballots for a weekend or for a full week or for a full 2 weeks, depending upon what you're able to do. And so we're asking people, we've had hundreds and hundreds of signups. We expect to have thousands. We need thousands, quite frankly, in Arizona, and we need you. And that the time is running short to join us in Arizona and come out. We'll give you a hotel. Turning Point Action will pay for it. We'll sign you houses that are close by, people that are close by, so you can call and text and follow up with them right in Arizona in the suburban areas, nice and safe. Safe areas during the day, go out and help us chase ballots in the month of October. So we need people to come out after October 9th, really anytime that October 7th week and on, but October 9th and on when ballots will be out, is come join us. And that's at tpaction.com/100. If you can spend a weekend in Arizona, if you can drive there from a state, if you can fly there, we will cover your entire hotel while you're there, a few other goodies, and then help us join into the battle of America, which may come down likely to Arizona. So we need you in Arizona, tpaction.com/100. We've had a lot of people offer to help remotely. We've got plenty of people helping remotely at this point. We need people in Arizona to come here and help us in Arizona.
This is a call to arms. We need you to say, hey, I have a flexible lifestyle. I have space. I have time. I'm willing to move to Arizona for a month or for 2 weeks. We will train you. Tyler and his team are doing daily trainings on the technology, on the app, how to use it, understanding the data, and then hitting doors every day, just knocking on a door, having conversations, making sure that low propensity voters have a plan to vote and understand the stakes of this election. So once again, tpaction.com/100. Tyler and his team will take excellent care of you. They've completely ramped up so that they can absorb people that are willing to move to Arizona. That's the big call, right, Tyler? Arizona? The
travel
need is
to
in
Arizona. And you mentioned, Andrew, it can be even just for a weekend. It could be for 4 days. It could be for 2 days. It could be for a handful of days, a week. If you can take a week off of work, we'll put you in the hotel for the entire time. whether it's just a few days or for the week or for 2 weeks, and we will get you out. So just like you mentioned, Andrew, we will be doing daily trainings. So those are accessible at the hotel that you're staying at. We will do it at our headquarters. So you can come see Turning Point headquarters, or you can just join and get the training that you need on Zoom prior to going out. So everyone will be trained. You'll be given the right houses that are near your hotel. You'll be given the travel opportunity near your hotel. And then we'll put you up for as long as you can stay to help us make sure Arizona wins.
This is great. So if you are listening to this and you always dreamed of joining the Peace Corps and it never happened, or the French Foreign Legion, or deploying to, you know, some far flung country. No, the battle lines are here, right in the United States, right in Arizona. We have a major call. We need you. We need bodies in the ground, on the field, in the field, chasing ballots, knocking doors, making phone calls, and helping people make a plan to vote. So, I mean, how many could we accept to this program? Thousands? Is that what you're saying?
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds more. And we want to keep going and fill every hotel room we possibly can in the state of Arizona. So there is no cap on it. We will take you, your family, anyone that can come. It's tpaction.com/100.
Awesome. Thanks, Tyler. Keep up the good work in Michigan. We'll see you soon, man. All right, so I am very much looking forward to this next conversation with John Daniel Davidson. He's a senior editor at The Federalist. We love The Federalist. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you have this piece up. It's the title of it, I think, is provocative. It says, "It's not just Haitians in Springfield. Mass immigration is destroying the American nation." So, John, I'm just going to start here. But, John, we're a nation of immigrants, and it's part of the fabric of the American history, tradition, to be a nation welcoming of immigrants. And so aren't you just a big, giant racist?
Yeah. Well, thanks for that opening. Let's start there. It's a good place to start. We are a nation of immigrants trope is a misdirection, I think. Yes, we're a nation of immigrants, you know, starting with the Puritans, right? Going all the way through the 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th, 21st century. The key, though, is that what we forget when we talk about us being a nation of immigrants, we're a nation of immigrants in which the immigrants assimilated to our sort of American culture, folkways, and way of life. And that's a culture and a way of life we inherited from the English. Okay, so that's the foundation of American culture is English culture. And I'm not the first person to say this. This is a well-established reality, right? And so subsequent waves of immigration, whether we're talking about the Germans or the Irish that came in the 19th century, or subsequent waves of immigration, all those immigrants were expected to assimilate to the dominant mainstream American culture, which is a culture based on Judeo-Christian Western civilization and embodying unique American values that we have worked out in our Bill of Rights, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, tolerance, and kind of an open and free society. Those are the kinds of things that all immigrant waves were expected to adopt and take on as their own, including most basically the English language. And almost none of that happens nowadays. These waves of immigrants we're seeing now, the largest wave of immigration we've ever seen in American history under the Harris-Biden administration, yes. No amount of assimilation is required or requested from these people.
Nor is it expected. And I think, John, you're getting to something that we as a country no longer have the confidence of our own convictions or our own values and traditions to assert and to demand assimilation from newcomers. And I think a lot of us find that really appalling. I think ultimately, you know, to the point of your headline here in this story, it's not about pets. It's not about dogs. It's not about any of this stuff. Underlying all of that is this cultural collision that we are experiencing with these fresh waves of immigration. And frankly, I think the bleed has been happening for decades now to the point where we've lost the courage of our own value system. And so I completely agree on this show. We completely agree with what you're saying. But I want to address another talking point here that we all encounter with this. But John, they're just here to work. And this is really good for the GDP, and it's going to grow our economy. And John, they're taking jobs Americans don't want. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, no, you hear this talking point a lot. And, you know, the unfortunate reality about our immigration debate is that we can't get beyond this idea of, you know, the talking point on the one hand of securing the border. It's all about the border, right? And on the other hand, we can't, when it comes to legal immigration, we can't get beyond this talking point of like, oh, it's good for the economy, it's good for GDP, it's just a numbers game. My response to that, and I say so in the piece, is that America is not just a tax farm for a global empire. We're a people, we're a nation. We have common language, common values and traditions, a shared past and a common future. And so GDP the relative tax rate for the local municipal government is not the end all be all of the immigration debate. It's one part of it, but it's taken on this outsized, swollen, grotesque, proportions and come to dominate our immigration debate as though we're all just cogs in a GDP machine. And that's not what a nation or a people are. Now, I agree that we should only be letting immigrants into the country who are going to benefit the American people in some way. And part of benefiting the American people is contributing to our economy. That's one aspect among several important aspects that we should consider. But anymore, that's the only thing. Certainly, that's the only thing Democrats talk about. But it's also the only thing like libertarians and a lot of establishment Republicans want to talk about either, is how this will affect the tax rate or the GDP. I mean, it's a bipartisan problem, and it has been for a long time.
It's infuriating when they look at immigration as just sort of this like GDP arbitrage sort of like equation. And I love the way you said that, John. And I think it's so important. We are more than a tax farming economy. We are more than a GDP. We are a people. We are a land. We have customs and traditions and shared values and history. Our ancestors bled and died on battlefields to give us this inheritance that we enjoy and that we need to preserve. So I love everything that you're saying.
Hey everybody, Charlie Kirk here. You've asked and MyPillow listened. They're finally bringing you the most requested offer ever. Right now, you can get the queen size premium MyPillow for only $19.98. MyPillow is made with patented adjustable fill. It adjusts to your exact individual needs, regardless of your sleep position. It helps keep your neck aligned and holds its shape all night long, so you get the best sleep of your life. But that's not all. Get their six-piece kitchen and bath towel set for only $25. The brand new mattress topper for as low as $69.98, and their famous MyPillow bed sheets for as low as $25, and so, so much more. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-875-0425. Use promo code Kirk to get huge discounts on all MyPillow products, including the premium queen-size MyPillow for only $19.98. That's the lowest price ever. Don't delay. Order today. Use promo code Kirk at checkout. That is promo code Kirk at MyPillow.com. Check it out right now. Wonderful organization, MyPillow.com.
I want to sort of pivot a little bit to what happened last night in Springfield, Ohio. We had Vivek Ramaswamy, who is the son of immigrants. He's brown, and yet he bleeds red, white, and blue. He speaks our language. He speaks our values. And this was a really powerful town hall. And I mean, he was getting standing ovations. They're begging him to run for governor. I mean, this was tremendous. And then I want to play this clip here because I think it illustrates what you're talking about, this collision of cultures and different backgrounds, Western culture versus whatever Haiti has or Liberia, right, or whatever. Let's play cut 114. This is a story from a resident of Ohio, or Springfield, Ohio. It says her daughter was chased down the street by a machete-wielding immigrant. 114.
So I have a young daughter. I have two daughters, actually. Sure. And so she's been followed around Walmart. She's been stalked. She ran to her car, threw her stuff down, ran to her car. She was chased. Okay? They were immigrants. She was chased by a man with a machete on her way to work. Called the police. She told them what had happened and wanted to file a report. 2 hours later, the police still had not called her back and never checked on the crime. So that's how you know there's no crime in Springfield, because no one's reporting it.
And I do want to play his reaction here, John. I'll get your take on the other side of this. 115.
See, here's the thing, and it's uncomfortable to say this, but it's true. If your first act of entering the country breaks the law, then you're more likely to break the law when you're already here. And we say that, you know, that's a difficult situation, but you deal with it in a different way. And so I think we have to restore the culture of the rule of law in this country. In this town alone, double the number of shoplifting crimes in the last 2 years. 2 years is not a long time for shoplifting rates to double. Auto thefts are up by over 50% in that same time frame. And as you said, based on your daughter's story, that's against the backdrop of many of them likely even going unreported.
John, why I like this clip so much is it shows the degradation of the quality of life, the expectations that we all hold as Americans of what we can expect on a daily basis, and this confrontation with this 20,000 strong community of Haitians that just came in has absolutely deteriorated the life of regular, ordinary, everyday Americans. Your take?
Yeah, I want to be clear on something, and I mentioned this in my piece. I'm not saying that people from different parts of the country, from parts of the world, I should say different parts of the world, not Western Europe, can't come to America and become good Americans. That has always happened. That's all. That's been a part of our history since the beginning. And so obviously, Vivek Ramaswamy is a great example of that. You know, he's a great American, and he has assimilated. And he, as you say, he bleeds red, white, and blue. But it matters what the countries are, where people come from. As yes. a country, our immigration policy should be to limit the number of people who come to our country from places like Haiti, which is a dysfunctional country with a very degraded culture, where cultures of crime are rampant in Haiti, lawlessness. I mean, the place is ruled by like cannibalistic warlords. The majority religion there is voodoo. So, I mean, let's get real. We should limit the number of Haitian immigrants or asylum seekers or parolees that we allow into the country. And that's true of a whole host of nations, right? We should also limit the number yes. of Chinese immigrants simply for national security reasons. There's a whole range of reasons. And we used to understand this as a nation. We used to limit and discriminate between countries because we want to preserve our culture and our way of life, and we want to look after our security, and we want to look after our people. But we don't do that anymore. Under the Biden-Harris administration, under the Democrats, they literally let in almost anybody who manages to sneak across the Rio Grande and then yes. legalize them after the fact. And that's no way to keep a country.
I'm in the camp of longstanding believing that the United States of America is not a racist country and the least racist country known to mankind. I have never experienced that type of invidious racism growing up. There's something going on in the country right now. When I say right now, I'm talking like the last 9 to 12 months in this country. There is a weird uptick in racial tension in this country that did not exist in the 30 years that I grew up. Take the immigration issue. You take 20,000 people who are unprepared to integrate into a community, dump them into a city of 50,000, you're going to get a reactionary response. Then you demonize the people who have the reactionary response, who say, oh, you're blaming me. They're going to have ill will, in this case, towards the Haitian community.
Why don't we go ahead and play 119? He was just spitting fire, Vivek was. 119.
There's no better way to create racism in America, anywhere, than to take something else away from someone's family because of their skin color. So whether it's a seat in college or whether it's a job or now even forms of federal aid under the likes of Gavin Newsom or Kamala Harris, say that you only get certain forms of aid if you're a racial minority, if you're black or Hispanic. That actually creates more racial animus in response. And so this is what I think many people on the right sometimes miss, which is that are these anti-racist programs, are they racist against whites or Asians? They are, but actually it's not just that it's racist against whites and racist against Asians. It is literally fueling a new wave of anti-black racism in the country that otherwise would not have existed if it weren't for those woke anti-racist policies in the first place. It is divide and conquer. It's the media.
Such good stuff from Vivek there. A truly important visit. Him being a person of color, I think, added special significance. John, I want to get into this topic of legalization, because the big talking point from the media and from Democrats is you stop calling them illegal Haitians in Springfield or wherever they might be. These have been legalized. John, explain why that is a little bit misleading, to say the least.
Yeah, it's misleading because a lot of these Haitians are here under a program called Temporary Protected Status, or TPS. TPS was created in 1990 under the George H.W. Bush administration, and it was originally supposed to be a program to give relief to small numbers of people in other countries who had suffered some sort of natural disaster or were fleeing from like a war, like war refugees. And the idea, even in its name, temporary protected status, meant they could come here and take refuge temporarily in the United States until they recovered from the hurricane or the war was, ended, right? That program started in 1990. Never went away, and it is temporary in name only. The original group of people who the program was targeted to were added to, and so every couple of years a new natural disaster or a new economic crisis or a new fighting would break out here or there, and so we've just added people to the TPS program year over year, so that now people in the TPS program have been living in the United States for decades and decades. They have families here. They're never going to leave, right? During the Trump administration, Trump tried to end TPS for, I think it was 200,000 Salvadorans who were given TPS after like an earthquake in El Salvador in 2001, something like that, decades ago. And his own administration, the bureaucrats inside DHS that were tasked with doing this, slow walked it to allow for left-wing activist groups to sue the administration and tie it up in the courts until Trump left office. And then the Biden administration immediately rescinded that Trump order. And those hundreds of thousands of Salvadorans who have been in the TPS program for 20 years can still stay here. So it's an absurd program, and this is how our government works. Like, we don't distinguish between legal and illegal anymore in our program. Another example, quickly, because I know this is bureaucratic kind of like, jargon here, is paroling people off. The Border Patrol will arrest people for illegally sneaking over the Rio Grande and coming into the country legally. They'll arrest them, take them to Customs and Border Protection, and then Customs and Border Protection will use something called paroling, which used to be very limited case-by-case basis, and just parole them off into the United States with a request to appear before an immigration judge in like 3 or 4 years. And that's been used now on a mass scale. Like, mass numbers of people have been paroled into the country. They're illegal immigrants. They were arrested by Border Patrol agents with guns. They were detained and put into detention and processed before, through this bureaucratic order made possible through Joe Biden's executive orders, they're just being paroled off into the country. Technically, those people are supposed to be in deportation proceedings, and they used to be deported, but now, obviously, they're not.
Well, hopefully we get Trump in and we'll have a mass deportation. We need it. This is a longer clip, and I'll get your quick reaction on the other end of it, John. This is J.D. Vance addressing this exact topic, 139.
If you become the vice president under a Trump administration, what will you guys do about the migrants that are already there, since they did arrive legally? And a follow-up to that, if you plan to deport them, how would you do that legally?
Well, look, this is a media and Kamala Harris fact check that I want to clarify and clear up right now. Now, the media loves to say that the Haitian migrants, hundreds of thousands of them, by the way, 20,000 in Springfield, but hundreds of thousands of them all across our country, they are here legally. And what they mean is that Kamala Harris used two separate programs, mass parole and temporary protective status. She used two programs to wave a wand and to say, we're not going to deport those people here. Well, if Kamala Harris waves the wand illegally and says these people are now here legally, I'm still going to call them an illegal alien. An illegal action from Kamala Harris does not make an alien legal. That is not how this works.
Hear from J.D. Vance. Real quick reaction, wrapping it up for us, John.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. The administrative state and administrative bureaucracy in the executive branch has been used for decades to subvert what's actually our immigration written law. And DHS has so much discretion to just parole people off or to wave a wand, as he says, and grant them temporary status. We need to overhaul our immigration law completely and mass deportations.
Well said. Thank you, John. It's all a scam, isn't it? Thank you, brother. Talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Talk to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.